This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hello and welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast. I'm your host, Harold Thornbrough, joined by my co-host, Rachel Jamison, as usual. And last week, Rachel got to record on her own, so that was a good episode. That was 2 weeks ago when we recorded this one, so that'll be 2 weeks ago. That's what happens when we get ahead and forget when we recorded. So 2 weeks ago with your friends there in Michigan, and did a great job with that. But today we're going to talk about our favorite things about homesteading and maybe our least favorite things. I think we think that homesteading is worth it, so we don't think that the least favorite things outweigh the favorite things, but it's not all perfect, right?
Nope.
So there are definitely things that we like less about homesteading than other things. But before we jump into that, what is new on your homestead?
Oh, what is new on my homestead? Apple everything.
I've seen some of your posts. Yeah, you've been bringing in the apples.
Lots of apples. So some of them, hopefully they hold out in the basement, but I've been making everything apples.
Do you have like all the tools? Do you have like the apple corer, like the hand crank apple corers and peelers?
Doesn't work that great.
Really?
However, I saw a new setup where somebody puts it on, they wash both sides of their sink, and instead of putting it on the counter, they turn it sideways and they put it on their sink, that middle part of your sink.
Yeah.
And it puts the peels right into the sink. And I'm thinking I'm going to try that and see if it works better. Part of the problem is it slides all over. And the other part of the problem with those is if you don't have apples that are hard, it kind of just mashes them. Yeah. You have to have a hard, like a Macintosh probably doesn't work real well. You need like a harder apple that doesn't. Yeah. Otherwise, it just mushes.
Okay.
But I do have all of them. I for the first time this year, I bought a food mill.
Okay.
Hand crank food mill. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to use that to make applesauce. I haven't used it.
You do like cider press and all that stuff? Or?
So my husband, I believe, is out working on that right now.
Oh, is he making one or he's buy one that you're putting together?
We don't have one and we've been looking for a used one.
Okay.
And we haven't been able to find one. So he's got this idea. Who knows? I'll share pictures if it works. But he's got some idea in his head. That's how his... He's kind of one of those, you know, little genius people that can like, he dreams.
He's not going like full hydraulic on Disney and stuff and making like a hydraulic.
He has a drill press out there. So I wouldn't be surprised. He said something about, I have that press, you know, and I'm like,
okay. Yeah. Well, if this thing works, you got to share some pictures and stuff of that. That'll be great.
He's got some ideas in his head. I'm not quite sure what they are, but it was that or he's working on his deer blind.
Right. But both are important.
Exactly.
me and my wife were just talking about getting a cider press because our apples, we get a lot of apples, but they're not perfect apples. You know, you get a lot of imperfect apples. They're not just great eating apples. So they're great to peel, maybe make applesauce out of like you're doing or make cider out of, things like that. They're not perfect apples you want to just sit there and munch on. So we're talking about getting cider press because I think that would be...
Too bad we don't live closer. We could share.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, they're a little pricey, but...
They are.
So is cider if you buy it, honestly.
Well, I have... Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of people will make a bunch of it and just stuff it in the...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Definitely something you could do that with. But yeah, I've got a lot of...
That's ours too. I mean, my apples have diseases. We've been working on it. And I mean, I've talked about it several times on the podcast.
Yeah.
So that's what a lot of ours end up being, like applesauce and stuff.
Mine don't get like one bad spot on one side, you know. It's like the whole apple is fine, but they'll have like that one spot. And it's like every app, it's like I don't have hardly any perfect app.
I had a few perfect ones, but not very many. And we had, let me see, I can't even remember. I should have counted. There's at least 11 5-gallon bucket full of apples.
Yeah, we'll make a nice
hole. And half of them because they were diseased, just they're not going to be, they're not great apples.
Right.
So, yeah. You better don't have a pig.
Well, I got to enjoy something on my homestead for the first time this week.
Yeah.
I ate two figs off my fig tree.
I'm jealous.
I did. I got two figs. I was like, look at this. And I did. It's a Chicago fig. And I just planted it at Lake Spurning, actually.
Oh,
and it produced two figs for me. I was like, you got to be kidding me. So I picked them both and ate them.
Okay. So how is it compared to, like, I mean, because every time you have something fresh, it's always so much better.
They were really, really good. The one was a little overripe. So it was, it was a little mushy, but it was still good. But yeah, they were very, very good. Best I've ever ate.
I'm sure. It's always that way. I remember
a couple weeks ago, I had peaches off my tree for the first time because we hadn't had any peaches. And that was like 2 weeks ago.
So good.
And they were the best peaches, that I've ever ate. My oldest daughter was here. Yeah. She was like, these are the best peaches I've ever ate. So.
Well, and this is why, we advocate for homesteading because
things like that.
This is one of the reasons, like, your food is so much better when it's fresh.
Yes.
When you get it at the supermarket, they have to pick it before its peak. So,
more fulfilling to go out there and just pick it up for your yard and eat it. We can get into all those reasons. Yes. But other than that, I did a lot of garden cleanup. I did get some, I uncovered, because I covered up a couple beds to solarize them. And I uncovered and I got the cover crops down, a seed down in those two beds. Okay. So we'll see how that goes. I'm sure they'll come up good. And,
mine's really coming up right now.
I've been getting lots of tomatoes, lots of peppers still. The peppers are just nuts. I mean, I could go out there and fill a bushel basket with them again.
Mine were not doing anything, and suddenly it's like, bang. But
they're doing
good
now.
We're supposed to be 40 degrees tomorrow night. They probably will. But
yeah,
we're getting to that time where the 30th is usually around now is about somewhere first frost for us usually. So
yeah.
I'm going to go pick as many as I can, probably tonight and tomorrow, just in case we get one of those nights.
Yeah, I've had mine going in the dehydrator like crazy because I just don't want to do much with them right now. So I've just been dehydrating them all and just filling it up, running them for a day, filling it up, running them a day, just kind of just filling up jars with them. I'm not even grinding them or nothing. I'm just drying them, filling up jars, throwing them.
With my hot peppers, I'll probably dry them, but I wanted to make, we have a bunch of banana peppers. We're going to do pickled peppers.
Yeah, I've already got a bunch of those pickled. So, I mean, I still got so many after. I've been trying to give them to the neighbor kids and everything else. It's like zucchini for me this year. I've just been passing peppers out.
My beans are like that.
Yeah, you have the bean year. So it's been peppers for me. But we get a lot of tomatoes, too. I think the tomatoes are probably at their peak right now. We're getting so many tomatoes.
Yeah,
I'm not even getting to them. A lot of them are starting to go rotten out there before I get to them, so I'm not picking them fast.
Yeah, I think after we're done with this, I'm going to have to go pick them. I haven't wanted to pick them because I haven't had time to process them. And we have fruit flies in abundance in the house that I can't get rid of right now.
We got the gnats flying around
here. Yes, and I don't want to bring any more fodder into the house for them.
I've literally been just washing them off, sticking them in baggies, sticking them in the freezer because I don't want to mess with them right now. I've just been freezing like all of them. But I've got the freezer pretty much maxed out. I hardly have any more room to do anything.
My freezer's maxed too.
Yeah,
so
I don't know if I can get one more bag in there, honestly.
However, I did roast a bunch of them, which
for your ketchup. Yeah.
Keep
bragging about that.
Yeah, for the ketchup. I roasted a bunch for the ketchup, and it does like shrink the size down considerably when you roast.
Yeah. Them. And then are you freezing them after you're roasting them?
I got no space in my freezer.
Oh, okay. So what do you, you're just.
It's full up. I blanched tons of broccoli and cauliflower, and that's what, and I did some fruit, like some melons and stuff, and I just don't have any more room in the freezer.
I think what's tying up most space in my freezer is cabbage, because I had all those cabbage. I had the best cabbage ever, and I just didn't want it. I made a few jars of sauerkraut and things, and I was just like, okay. And I was like quartering it, putting in bags, and throwing it in the freezer.
Have you ever had fried apples and cabbage together?
No.
Oh,
doesn't sound great.
No, it is. It's really good.
I believe you. I'll try it.
That reminds me. I think I should do that. I think I have one head of cabbage out in the garden. Still.
So you just like chop up the cabbage and chop up.
We cut it like you would sauerkraut for the cabbage. And I also put onion.
Okay.
And then we just slice the apples kind of thin and we fry it. Usually, I mean, when I say fry, it's not like deep fried or anything.
Just a little oil in the pan and just almost like a stir fry or something.
Yeah, almost like a stir fry, but we cook it down so it starts to get maybe a little bit crispy.
Mm-hmm.
It's so
good. I'll take your word for it. I might try it.
It's good, but it's good. I mean, if you don't like the mushy texture, you're probably not going to like it.
It gets mushy?
A little bit. Yeah, that's why we try to get it till it's a little bit crispy. But it's kind of like hard to crunch. There's a lot of water there.
My favorite way to eat cabbage is raw cabbage. I love the taste of raw cabbage. But
really? You know,
it's my favorite way
to eat it. What do you call it? What's the salad? Coleslaw. You like coleslaw?
I do like coleslaw, yeah. But
my husband loves coleslaw.
But we make a lot of sauerkraut. And then, like I said, I just crunch it. I'll just cut it and just drop it in salads and stuff and just mix it kind of like 50-50 in a salad or something and eat it. I just love it raw.
I want to try. So my great aunt, actually my husband's great aunt, makes sauerkraut with apples in it. Speaking of apples again.
Sauerkraut with apples. I've never even heard of that. That's kind of interesting.
It's raw fermented. She never processes it. So it's your typical sauerkraut, but she puts a few apples in it. She grates them on a grater.
I guess I feel like I'm missing out on something special here because your apples sound like they go with this, but I never tried it.
My favorite way to eat kraut is actually with caraway.
I've just never had it.
It tastes kind of like anise.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a little different flavor.
Interesting.
I know. We do some weird food, I guess.
No. I'm just lazy like that. I don't go above and beyond. We're a meat and tater family here. We just keep it plain and simple and eat it. But we're probably missing out on a lot of good stuff doing that, you know?
Right. Well, yeah. I think with my husband's great aunt, she's in her mid-90s. I think it was, you know, one of those cabbage is ready at the same time the apples are ready because, you know, they homesteaded and then everybody had a garden. So store it up.
Well, it sounds like you got a lot going on, putting apples in everything, and I'm eating my figs over here. So I guess we can talk about just how great homesteading is before we get to talking about how great it isn't sometimes. But
how great it is.
I think we'll just go back and forth here on some different things. See if some of them we made lists here, but we didn't get together on our list.
We
probably have some of the same kind of stuff on some of our list here, but I'm curious about that. So why don't you go first and tell me one of your favorite things about.
Well, we kind of already talked about it, is you get the food when it's already at its peak. So flavors when they're just
the flavor like and the that. Quality of the food. That's on my
peach
list.
Right off the tree, that fig you were just talking about, right? I mean, there's nothing like pulling it. I mean, even the potatoes that we picked, you would think a potato is a potato. No, once you pull that right fresh out of the garden and you have some baked potatoes, it's so good.
Right.
So good.
Yeah. Taste is on my list because I put it kind of by itself, but then it's also kind of related to another thing that's on my list, which is that you're closely related. I love being closely related to my food, and that's all the food. I know what was put on the soil that grew it. I know what was fed to an animal that I'm eating. I know I love having that connection with my food. And when I say closely related, I just mean, it's just, you know, everything about it. You know, the seed you picked, you know, fed it and everything. And I just love that relationship with my food, having it where if I go to the store or to a restaurant, I have no idea, absolutely zero idea. What, I mean, it could be good. Maybe it isn't. I don't know. You just don't know. And nobody ever does know. And it probably isn't because it's cheap. Probably garbage food. And
unless you went to one of those special restaurants, but even then
you don't know for sure. Yeah,
it traveled on a truck to get there.
Exactly.
And I mean, this might upset some people, but even the organic label.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that are all out there.
Has some things that I wouldn't use. And it also, I believe that soil lacks. It's the organic label means that they just haven't put the worst chemicals on it.
Right.
It doesn't mean it's nutritionally dense like what we've worked at.
Exactly. Yeah. I feel like most homesteaders who are, you know, not organic certified are probably doing it better.
Yeah, for sure. Certified.
Yeah.
For sure.
You're feeding your soil. You're getting, like you said, nutrient dense food. You're getting a better quality product and you don't have the chemicals. So Right. Yeah, it's a good, I love the fact that we're closely related to our, that's probably my top thing.
The other thing I enjoy about that is, I mean, they've shown more and more with, they're actually making probiotics now that are soil-based because they have proven that that actually is really beneficial. And when you're so close to your garden and your food, you are touching in that soil and there's just, there's a health benefit there.
Kind of like it probably gives some credibility to the grounding, for grounding where people go barefoot.
I mean, I garden barefoot a lot. So.
Yeah. I mean, you know, but people talk about, some people blow that off like it's not real, but then other people swear to it. Yeah.
I don't know. I think, but I mean, I do think you have that we need those microorganisms.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, there's like, to get all geeky on some people, like there's the health hypothesis where they think a lot of people are sick because we're too clean.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there might be something for that. But I mean, they have some studies showing that people actually digging in soil, healthy soil, obviously, not poison soil, you know, are healthier and get
I've read some studies, so, you know, I've actually read some official studies on that, that, you know, the health benefits of being in the soil, working with your hands in the soil. Yeah. So absolutely.
The stress relief of being,
to me, I just think all around that's all connected, that closely related to my food. Like I said, that's why it's such the number one thing on my list. You'd think, I mean, with my past, what got me into it was looking for healthy food, but I think that's part of it because you're closely related. You make healthy food because you pour yourself into it and you're just paying attention to every aspect of it and it becomes a healthy food. So that's what I enjoy most about it.
Yep.
What else is on your list?
It, for me, it's peaceful and de-stressing to just be outside. I love being outside. I've always
love your garden. Love your garden.
I love my garden. Well, it's not just my garden. I just love being outside. The woods, a meadow, trees, forest.
I've often said that, like garden. When I go hunting. Yeah, I mean, I'll go hunting, and it's like I don't feel like, even if I set up in a tree stand for 5 hours and I don't even see a deer, it doesn't feel like a wasted trip because I'm out in nature just enjoying it, you know.
It's a reset for me and it's a stress relief. So
well, that's really similar to what I have on another thing I have on my list. It's not exactly the same, but I think one of my favorite things about homesteading is walking in my garden, but now for a little different reason. I love to take the little walk. I purposely make paths all through my garden. I make the paths. A lot of times I'll put like a little curve into them or like a little path, make them almost like a nature walk through my property. Right. And I enjoy that. And I like to take a little, you know, a bag or a basket with me or whatever, and just pick food. I love to just go out. It's lunchtime, just walk out and pick a few things, you know, and eat. It's fun. I love
that. Side note, Harold needs to do a garden.
I haven't done one for, it's been a while. Yeah, I haven't done one since I had this new property. The last one I've done, I only had the one property. Yeah, so.
I probably should do one, but it's getting a little late.
Yeah, right now I just don't want to do one because everything's like going to seed and it's all just out of control and it looks horrible, you know, and it's like, I don't want to do a garden tour like now. I should have done one about 2 months ago.
Next year, I'm going to hold you to it.
Okay, I'll do one next year.
I want to see all these curving paths.
And yet, I like to watch people's gardens in any state. And I know people would want to see it in any state also. But I, you know how you feel. It's like, I don't want to share it when it looks like that.
Maybe I'll do one with mine, weeds and all.
Yeah, then people like that. I think it's real.
And my dead, like, as half of my stuff is dead and I haven't had time to pull it.
Yeah. I love the nature walks through the garden. I mean, it feels like a nature walk. I like to create that kind of ambiance in the garden, you know, like where, you know, you got the higher level stuff, the trees and the tall shrubs and the, you know, the sunflowers and everything. And then you kind of walk through things. And I make trellises here and there to walk under and, you know, between and things. And it feels nice to take that walk every day, you know, whether you need to or not, just to get out there and take a stroll around your property and just kind of just enjoy it, you know, but also pick a few things. And I love that kind of harvesting. That harvesting is going to come down in my favorite and my least favorite thing here in a little bit. You'll hear, but that kind of harvesting, I love to just stroll through the garden, pick a few things for the meal that night or whatever, go in the house, make something, enjoy it. I love that. That is like one of my favorite things.
Yeah, same. I love that my garden in the summer dictates what is for dinner.
Yeah, I love that too. Yeah. It's like you go out there, like I pick some eggplants yesterday. Okay, let's go have some eggplant parmesan, you know, and you make some stuff. You know, it's like you just see some stuff that's ripe or ready to pick and you just go make something. And I love that.
Yeah, I think so. I'm going to be recreating my garden next year because we now have our property. And I like, I want a creative spot out in my garden where I can like sit and have a cup of coffee.
Yeah, tea. I have a little table and chairs out here on the side of the house, right in the middle of the trees. Yeah. I made a little spot just for that. And as a matter of fact, I've actually like be writing a blog post or something. I'll go out there and set up that little table out there between the pear trees and just write a blog post or something. It's just enjoyable.
That's perfect.
Yeah. I love doing that.
And what else do I love? I can talk about, I've got a few things on my not like list. What else do you enjoy while I'm thinking?
I love that I healthy food that's affordable. It's big to me because if you're going to buy like the expensive stuff, the best of stuff, right? It's really expensive. And I mean, if you're buying enough for a whole week's worth of groceries, I mean, it could add 20-30% to your grocery bill at least.
Well, let me put this in perspective. An organic gluten-free sourdough loaf is $12 and it's about this big and you can buy it about this big. So for people, that's like the size of a coffee cup plate saucer. Like $12.
You're making it for nickels, really, probably.
I'm probably making it for a couple dollars because gluten-free grain is expensive, but not $12. And my loaves are much bigger.
So. And no doubt there's some veggies that are super cheap in the store, but if you're going to buy the best of the best, it's definitely going to be more expensive. You're growing the best of the best. And
I mean, and it can definitely you've had a store-bought tomato, right?
Yeah. I mean, it tastes like nothing. Yeah. I mean, they're red. I mean, you know, but they don't really
it
have
tastes
much
like
taste.
Water or they're all pulp cardboard or they just
don't have good taste.
It's horrible. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I just love that. I mean, you can have that quality food for a really good price.
Right.
So,
well, my neighbors will say that to me because I will often give our neighbors produce and they'll say, I went down to the farmer's market and I bought tomatoes. They're not as good as yours. What do you do different? I said, well, you probably bought them from somewhere where they're growing them like in production.
Well, a lot of people at farmers markets, it's been proven. There's been some documentaries or some videos and stuff on it where they would buy it from just like the same companies that stores get it from and then bring it to the farmers market and sell it.
Yeah.
And or so it's the same.
They're growing it hydroponically. I'm not beating up on hydroponics, but I don't think I've.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, there's definitely some things that I think that aren't as good nutritionally. They're not as nutritionally dense as if you grew it in soil, for sure. Yeah.
But the flavor, back to the flavor again.
Yeah. I mean, it is a big part of it, but for the right price too. I mean, you save that money.
And the other, one of the things I like is for me, homesteading allowed me to be home. I don't think that if we didn't homestead, we would have been able to afford for me to be home.
Mm-hmm.
Like we didn't save. It was still really tight and we didn't save, you know, $40,000 a year, but we saved a significant amount of money because I was growing food and, you know.
And it's kind of a running joke, but there's a way to do it that actually costs you a lot, sometimes more than what it costs you to buy the stuff at the store.
Yeah.
And people just, I mean, you don't have to do that though, but people will spend so much money building these elaborate raised beds and greenhouses. I mean, they'll spend so much money that it's just, you know, you could buy it cheaper.
A $5 tomato.
And it's a running joke. You see the posts like that on social media and whatever, but it doesn't have to be that way. I mean, seeds are cheap and the whole world's made out of soil. Yeah. So, I mean, you can just dig a hole, you know, and make it and blame it.
So for us, I mean, that was one of the bonuses for homesteading for us was it enabled me to be home and homeschool the kids.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Because we saved a lot of money frugally.
Yeah. That's a really good one. I also love to learn new skills. I think that homesteading there's an endless amount of things you can learn in homesteading. There's always another thing. There's always another way to make something or another recipe or another plant that you can learn how to grow. Or there's just so many skills and so many things you can
layer
learn
on top of each other. And, I mean, later we're going to talk about a question somebody had in the front porch and, you know, these skills layer.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? And I just love, it's always been a thing with me. So as a kid, I just love to learn new things, you know, especially when it's at my leisure, when I feel like learning and not when it's being forced on me. But I do, I just love to learn something new. And it's, and there's just always something, there's always something new to learn. There's so many things you don't know and you don't even know you don't know them until you start trying to learn them.
you're like, oh, that exists. I didn't know.
I mean, there's just things you just don't know until you do it. And I love that. I love passing those things on to my kids and grandkids too. I just love that.
Well, and that's what I was just going to mention. That's the other thing I like is it can be a family event. For us, it's always been a family thing. We've all somewhat done it together. Now we all have our certain areas. My husband doesn't spend a lot of time in the garden, but he loves flowers.
Yeah.
And, he loves to work in his garage, like we were talking about, you know, maybe making an apple cider press.
Well, that's one of the things that's on my list that I'll talk about in a minute.
Yeah. So, I mean, he loves to do that kind of stuff, but he doesn't necessarily love to be in the garden with me. He certainly doesn't like to cook. Yeah. I don't even like to cook, quite honestly. I just do cook. But so it's somewhat of a family thing. We always did wood together as a family.
Mm-hmm.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I think so too. I mean, I probably less involved because I got into it when my kids were like already older. And so it's more for my grandkids now, getting them out there in the garden and doing things with them. My little granddaughter, she's here all the time and she just loves to get out there.
I saw your Instagram photo.
Yeah, we're picking all the sunflowers. She had that one. She had a sunflower dress on. She's like, look, it looks just like my dress.
Oh, that's cute. Yeah, so that my grandkids, that's the first thing they do. They get out of the car and they run right to the garden.
Yep. And so
and I love that's the one of the things I love about my garden not being sprayed is I can say, I don't care, whatever you want out there, you eat it.
Yeah. Just eat it right out of the garden. Yeah.
Yep.
I agree. So you mentioned your husband liking to do stuff in the shop and build things. That's one of my favorite things too. I love to build things. I love just taking on new little projects on the homestead and building stuff. And I've got I wish that lumber hadn't got so expensive because I had all kinds of plans to build a few new things, you know, but it's like a lot of lumber and it's like, oh man, I don't want to spend that money right now. So you try to source used lumber, or, you know, maybe look at
I think his deer blind now is 4 pallets so far that he's taken apart and reused.
I've definitely found myself trying to source used wood more because of the price.
And his work, because they get metal on them, those pallets are pretty sturdy, so they're nice and thick ones.
Like oak stuff. I've got a lot of plans. I've still things I want to build around. I would love to build an outdoor smoker. I would love to build an outdoor solar dehydrator.
A solar dehydrator really bad.
There's all kinds of projects I would love to build more outside.
And now Sonia has me wanting a solar oven.
I've seen some of those. There's some nice, I think there's good ones and bad.
We've talked about building a more permanent rocket stove.
Yeah, I actually built one
outdoor oven.
I took a barrel and a stove pipe and cement and made a rocket, cut a hole in the side, made the side shoot. It's like a barrel, and I can actually can with that if I have to. I can actually go out and fire that thing up and set my big pot on it.
We did maple syrup on ours, but I never tried canning. Although
I probably wouldn't do my pressure canner on it, but I would. Right. Do like water bath canning on it for sure. I love projects.
See, now I like the projects like soap making and making candles and sewing.
One of my daughters
is really into typical female things, you know.
Yeah, and I think it's great. That's going to come down to one of our questions here in a little bit too.
Right. Although I do have a dream to do some woodworking. I've had this dream for a while, and it might actually happen this winter. We'll see.
I actually enjoy making things like that too. Like, well, I'll make the comfort salve and I like making that. That's fun to make. And I'll make a few things like that I think are fun. You know, I don't hate making that kind of stuff. It's all part of that process of making things. And I think it's, like I said, I enjoy it to an extent, you know, to a certain extent. I don't want to spend all my time in the kitchen. It's not my favorite place to be. I'd much rather be in the garden.
Right. Those are the things. That's why I appreciate, for me, that's why I appreciate having four seasons, because those are the things I save to do in the winter when it's snowing out.
Well, it is part of the reason we put like a gazebo up over our back deck. We got a really kind of expensive metal gazebo, and really nice ones up over our back deck, because I want to do a lot of that stuff outside. I do a lot of canning outside. I just hate.
Yeah, that's my dream for our new homestead, is to have something covered, because I do have I have a deck, which I've canned on a lot. I've actually canned outside on burners, but it gets really hot and there's no, I can't do it in the rain. So I would like to have some kind of covered. That's like one of my dreams.
Yeah, it was because I don't,
that's the last thing I want to be is inside.
Right.
I want to be, that's part of the reason I don't like to cook.
And it's a lot easier to clean up the mess out there too. If all else fails, you just drag the hose over and spray things.
Exactly.
But yeah, those were some good things. I also love food security. I just love the fact that no matter what happens, we have food, you know, that if things got bad, which I, like you say, every episode is about, that's not about doom and gloom for me. I really don't think that way. But if things ever did get bad, if the stores were empty, we have food, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And I just love that we have the cupboards full at all times, pretty much, because we're growing everything and raising animals and
And you have the seeds, seeds and the skills to do it again next year.
And we could always up our production if things got so bad we needed more. You know, I could always start hatching more quail eggs or raising more rabbits or even growing things indoor on a larger scale or whatever for the winter. I mean, you could always just go to an extreme on it if you needed to produce more food year round, you know. So it's nice to have that ability to do that.
Right. Well, and it's just that seasonal living that our ancestors lived anyways. Like my grandparents had a cellar and, you know, they would store it as it came in. They didn't go to the store and buy it all. Right. So,
I love, and this is part of homesteading, and you mentioned it earlier, how you like to spend time in nature, but I love hunting, fishing, foraging. I like getting out in the woods and just doing all those things too, because it's just, you know, and like I said, you mentioned that, but I think it's on my list too. And I just love in those forms.
Yeah.
So it's useful. I'm not just walking in the woods, which is fine by itself, but you can actually provide for your homestead by spending.
I forage a lot. I don't think maybe I didn't share that in the homestead front porch. I don't think I shared my mushroom picture, which I don't know if it was edible.
I might've seen it on personal page, because
I don't know if it was edible, so I didn't pick it. But I actually do a lot of wild foraging with, you know, with sorrel and mullein, and we have wild apples at our property, but blackberries and raspberries, and there's a lot of stuff out there.
We do all the same stuff.
We love to do mushrooms in the spring. This year was very dry, so we didn't get mushrooms, but mushrooms, and I actually like to bow hunt more than we like to rifle hunt, because it's a little warmer.
Yeah.
And there's not as many people in the woods.
That's what I was going to say. That's the reason I bow hunt, is because there's a lot less people in the woods.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what,
and
I like.
Fishing, I like to fish, with the caveat that I hate.
Oh, yeah.
I do not like trolling.
Well, we do a lot of bank fishing, and we're just mostly pan fishing. I don't do a lot of bass fishing. We're just catching like bluegill and crappie. And, you know,
my husband loves to troll for salmon. Salmon are a big thing here, and my husband loves to troll for salmon, but I get motion sick, so I do not like trolling for salmon. But I like to fish. I love bluegill, and I don't mind white.
Yeah, you're up there right off the lake, so you guys
the big lakes.
Really
so we get salmon and whitefish, but I actually like the small fish better, like bluegill. Yeah. Give me a bluegill. I love them.
Yeah, I love you too. Yeah, Cannon and I talked about that a few episodes ago about panfish and how that was kind of our preferred fish to eat, you know, and stuff. And fun to catch too. I mean, you can just catch so many of them. It's really easy.
Yeah. But I mean, salmon is big. You get a lot.
But, you get a lot,
But yeah, there's definitely its downfalls. It's a lot of work. And it's colder when you do that.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. Something that was never on my radar when I first started homesteading, but it became something that I really enjoyed about homesteading later on, was the connection with other homesteaders. I never even thought about that when I started homesteading as something I would enjoy, but I do enjoy it. I enjoy spending time in like the Facebook groups. I enjoy meeting other homesteaders. Just that connection. It's just something that I really enjoy about homesteading, because there is a connection. You meet another homesteader, you just instantly have a lot in common, you know, and it's just something right. that's fun to talk and hang out with them and talk about those things. So I enjoy that connection too. It's one of my favorite things about homesteading.
That's one of the reasons I actually started leading the book clubs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cause we don't just talk about the books. We talk about other things, and it's nice to meet other homesteaders and
see. Yeah, you're doing a couple of those, aren't you? You're doing two of those, aren't you? Yeah, two different ones.
One of the groups, there was a lady I met this week for the first time that grows sheep. She grows the sheep not for meat, but to actually for wool.
Wool, yeah, okay.
And she's done it for 40 years. She was an older lady, and I thought it was fascinating.
I know some people that do Angora rabbits for that reason. They don't eat the rabbits. They use the manure from the rabbits for the garden, but they keep the rabbits right. for the fur and the manure. They don't eat any of them. And they make things from the fur.
Right. And the homesteaders, hair. We're kind of tied to our homesteads. So sometimes mm-hmm. the only way to meet people is through stuff like that.
Yeah.
And once in a while I go to like a physical in-person homestead meetup, and those are fun too. Mm-hmm. But I just love to hear people's stories.
I do too.
What they do and how they got there. Yeah. It's fun. Yep.
It is a big plus, I think. It's just something that I really enjoy. Like I said, I'm kind of an introvert, and I never thought I would enjoy that. You know, it's like I'll just be by myself and I'll stay over here. But I love jumping in the group, talking to people, and I love running into people and stuff. And it's just, like I said, something I didn't think I would ever think would be something that I would enjoy about homesteading, but it really is. But because you get around like-minded people, it's fun to be around them, you know.
It is. It's very fun.
But those are a few of my favorite things. Do you have anything else you can think of that is like your favorite things? Oh, I did have one.
Well, for me, I love animals. Now I don't have any, but I've been around a lot of homesteads with animals and helped on them. I do. I love animals. Like, I just love animals.
Yeah, I love raising them, taking care of them. When it comes to the process,
that's what I was going to say. That's the part that I do not like.
That would probably fall on the other side.
That part for me is.
Yeah. I didn't put it on my list, but it is something that.
It's the con. That's on the bad list for me. That is, I would have to say, the hardest thing that I've done is take lives, you know.
Well, I'll add something to that in a minute when we start talking about the bad. But I did want to mention one other thing I enjoy doing. And we both mentioned it in passing already. But it's sharing produce. I love to share with the neighbors. I love to share with the kids. I just love to share produce with people. And like I said, hand them a tomato and say, you ever tasted anything like that before? Or, you know, hand the neighbor kid a pepper and watch his face turn red or whatever. I mean, I just enjoy sharing.
Watch his face turn red.
You know, just fun stuff, you know, like that. But I do love.
I have a story about that. Like, I remember one of our kids wanted to get out of gardening one day. They just wanted to go inside, and they just looked at us and said, we didn't even think it up. They said, if I eat this pepper, can I go inside? And we looked at each other and we said, yes. And it was a hot pepper.
How about it? Wow. Yeah. I still can't get that out of my head with a neighbor kid through that chili pepper straight in his mouth, just munched on it like it was an apple. And man, I've never seen a face turn so red in my life. He looked like he was hurt. Real bad.
Not much to cure that.
Oh yeah, he was fighting for a water hose or something, but he couldn't find us. I felt sorry for him, kind of.
Remind me to not eat peppers at your place.
They're chili peppers. They weren't nothing special, but boy, they're not made to eat just straight up like that. You know, you don't want to do that. No. Some people can. I can't. It would have tore me up to do that. For sure. Least favorite things, Rachel, do you have anything that you just don't really like about homesteading? Well, I wouldn't even say you hate it, but they're just definitely on the least favorite list.
I would say my biggest negative would be culling animals.
Culling animals. See, I didn't even make my list because I don't like it, but I view it as such a necessary thing. I guess it is something that would be down closer to the bottom, but there are things I dislike more than that. For me with the animals, it's what I hate about lose them. When you're not calling them, when they just die on you, when something happens, I hate that. I hate it when an animal dies in my care and not because I was butchering it, but because it just died in my care. And I hate, you feel like a failure when that happens. And I don't like it. you know.
Yeah.
I try to take really good care of them.
That's a very bad feeling.
Yeah. And it's happened a few times with, you know, a couple rabbits and things. And I just, yeah, it's not as big of a deal when you've got small livestock. Now, if you have big livestock and that happens, that's not only is that just a failure that you feel, but I mean,
that's a financial loss.
Financial loss too. Yeah, exactly. That would really hurt, you know, and that could be a miserable thing to go through. So, yeah, losing an animal, but calling or, probably the number, this is going to shock you, the number one thing that I most not like about homesteading, that it's gone right, canning. I hate
really?
It. Hate it. I do it every year. I hate it.
I will can all day long before I make dinner. I hate cooking dinner.
It's not even that. I don't know. It's just the
and you would think everybody's always surprised. They see my food posts and they think I love to cook. And I'm like,
I actually like cooking better than I like canning. Canning just it's like
that's the one thing. Like if I could hire somebody to do one thing around my house, make dinner.
Make dinner, huh? See, yep. I wish I could hire somebody just to do all my Now, here's the thing, though. Like I was talking about earlier, like we walk around in the garden. I love to just pick food and harvest it. And if I do a little bit of canning, like I put up a couple jars here, a couple jars there, I don't mind that. But this time of the year, when everything's coming at you at once, you feel like you're just every day doing it over and over and over. Yeah. Oh, I get sick of it.
Well, that's I could take a picture. Like I keep taking pictures of my countertop and it really doesn't look much different. But it's different fruit and vegetables. It's just keeps coming and coming. Right.
Yeah. I just feel like it's like this time of the year is stressful for me because
it's overwhelming. Yeah.
Well, you got the time constraints there. You got to get the stuff in. You got to get something done with it or it's just going to go bad on you. A lot of pressure, I guess, to get it done, you know.
I think that's probably one of the negatives to living in the climate we live in. Now, I actually like living where I have snow and where the air hurts my face, but it shortens up our season greatly. So if you lived in like Georgia, maybe your season's longer. So you're not cramming it all in and you get to spread it out a little bit more. Maybe, with us, it's like I have this amount of time and that's it.
Yeah.
Like even for me, succession planting, really, I don't have a lot of options there.
The stuff that I would do that with is stuff that you eat fresh, like
lettuce and stuff.
Yeah, it's the stuff you'd eat fresh anyway. It's not even stuff you're canning usually so much. But yeah, the dehydrator's running 24/7. The pressure canner's running constantly. I mean, it almost gets overwhelming this time of the year, you know?
You're not doing it hard.
believe me, I do walk away from it sometimes and take a day or two break because I get frustrated. I was like, it can just
That's why I'm like with the beans right now. I'm like, I don't care if the beans die. I don't want to see another bean till next year.
And we're talking about our freezers being full. That's just me being lazy. I'm just cramming everything I can in the freezer, you know, because I don't want to mess with it right now. And but yeah, it's definitely gets overwhelming. And that is probably one of my least favorite things. And like I said, I love having the food. I love having it in the cabinet. Yeah. I love having the availability to it. I love eating it. But this is that necessary evil in between.
Right. Well, see, every year in like February, I'm chomping at the bit to start my seed. Mm-hmm. And every year by October, I'm like, die. Just die. You can all die.
That's the way I feel. But I still love going out and eating fresh tomato or something. I just hate, I love the fresh food. I just, the preserving stuff gets tiring.
Get tiring. And then about this time, at least, I don't know when your hunting season is down there, but I just will finish up canning the brick garden and then we'll be processing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause we do all of our own processing.
Like we're squirrel hunting and stuff right now. And then, and so I'm doing that. And then, but then there's, you know, deer hunt will come in.
And you process all of your own?
Yep.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, if I'm really busy, I might take a deer in to get it done. But
process all of our own too. And
I would say 90%.
It's like you just move from one thing to the next thing. Yeah. And
but you're
and then usually for me in the middle of winter is when I start to process bones and fat and the things I was too lazy to can that I shoved in the freezer. And
you're on a whole nother level with that. See, I don't even do a lot of that kind of stuff. You're getting, doing your own lards and all that kind of stuff too.
We do all of our own fat.
Yeah. So I haven't went there yet. So that's,
which I know some people think is unhealthy, but for us, we prefer animal fat.
Yeah. I think it's probably better for you.
It's certainly for us. It's sustainable where we live. I don't have a coconut tree and I don't have an olive, but I have lard and tallow.
You can press your sunflower seeds and get sunflower.
Yeah, squirrels usually take care of that for me. They usually decimate.
I don't have, but I lucked out this year. It looks like there's hardly any seeds missing from my sunflower heads. We cut them all down yesterday or a couple days ago, and they look good. They're mostly full. There's almost hardly anything missing.
That reminds me of one of my other least favorite things about homesteading, pests.
Yep, it's on my list. Yep.
I have
kind of on my list.
Beautiful apple melons that were just about perfect, and we ate one of them. And I went out this week and the squirrels have eaten half of all of the rest of the apple melon. So we got one apple melon. The squirrels got the rest.
How I put this on my list was not just pests, but it was when things get out of balance. And what I mean by that is pests or weeds or, you know, like some crazy thing that just spreads like crazy through your yard or just anything that gets out of balance. Because as organic gardener, it's a slower process to correct that.
Yeah.
If you wanted to get, you know, if you were a conventional gardener these days, you might be able to correct that quickly. But when you're doing it with organic methods, it's a lot slower of a process to get it to balance out, because some pests are fine. You got to have some bad bugs to bring in good bugs. You have to, you know, there's going to be, and to get there, sometimes you're a little out of balance, and those times when it's out of balance are miserable. You know, it's like, things are getting ate up or weeds are taking over through your, you know, because you can't get it leveled out quick enough or whatever. There's just things going on that it gets overwhelming when things get out of balance a little bit.
Well, that's like my apple trees are going to take several years to rectify. I can spray it and it's fine because I don't spray. Right. So at least not with chemicals. I'm using some neem oil and foliar sprays that are feeding it, but it's going to take several years. It's not just going to be, it takes a long time.
That's the whole thing with permaculture and organic gardening and everything. These things, it's better for you. It's better for soil. It's better for the planet. It's better for you, but it just takes a while to get things balanced out. Right. You know, it's just part of the process. And when you're, you know, sometimes I'm patient on things. Sometimes it's like, oh, I wish this was.
Well, I don't get it. It's hard to be patient when, especially like the apple trees are permanent part of permaculture. They're permanent, so they take a long time. But when you start losing something you really wanted to grow well in your garden, it gets frustrating when you're either losing it to disease or animals or bugs. Right.
Yeah. And sometimes it's just hard to keep up and get that, create that balance. And even when you're assisting it and you're out there, you know, by hand picking off bugs and trying to get the balance more straightened out, it's a lot of work. And I guess it can get overwhelming and And it also mentally, you're just thinking, okay, this is less food that's going in my cabinets. Right. And it's just, you know, and it does tend to be one of those things about homesteading that you don't enjoy, of course.
And I think new people too get frustrated as they're getting their soil built up, because it takes years to get to the point where your soil's built up. And we don't just walk out there and throw out seeds like at Johnny Appleseed, like we're in the Garden of Eden. So it just takes a while. Yep.
I get stressed. I get frustrated by the limitations of time, money, things like that, because it's like you want to grow your homestead so fast. You want to make all these changes so fast, but you're limited, you know, unless you're just going to go in massive debt or something, which nobody should as a homesteader. It's just it goes against the ethics of homesteading, as far as I'm concerned. It's why you're part of the reason you're doing it. So you're limited. You're limited on how much money you can spend each year. You're limited on how much time you can invest each year. And it's a slow process getting, like I just told you a little bit ago, I would love to build a solar dehydrator and a cold smoker and things like that outside. It's like, just time, you know, lumber is expensive, more time to build things. Your husband's out there trying to build a cider press, you know, I mean, it's like, there's all these projects and stuff, but they take time, you know, and it's like, you just one thing at a time.
How I feel right now with like rabbits. I would love to have rabbits and chickens again and some quail, but it's like, I'm at max right now with learning some things and
it's good to wait.
Do it right now.
But you also want those things. You wanted to see things happen a lot quicker. So it's like your limit. I get frustrated by the limitations of things, but but you don't want to, like I said, do anything drastic or, you know, go into debt.
Slow and steady wins the race.
It does. And it's the only really way to make homesteading Otherwise, you end up with those $5 tomatoes.
Right. One thing at a time. I know the first thing we did was tomatoes. That was it. That was the only thing we grew that year. And I think new people want to just go full force in. And I think that's where you see, I think the average homesteader quits after sitting.
Is that right? Yeah, I heard that.
That's what I heard that statistic on a podcast. But yeah, and I think it just... You kind of have to slow down a little bit. And
yeah, it definitely has a level. There's a level that can happen where you reach a certain point where it starts. You get burned out after a while if you don't pace yourself. Like I get really close to getting burned out every fall with the harvests and the things going on.
Yeah.
But then, like you said, with that season coming up, you get some relaxed time. You can step back a little bit and slow down. And I love the slow times. It's the busy times that stress you out a little bit and can cause burnout. And you can you can contribute to that by adding things that maybe you're not ready for yet, you know. So
Well, and you can, even if you recognize that, I've had times where I've pulled back. Like we don't have chickens right now. We used to have chickens. We realized that we couldn't do chickens because we're gone a lot and it just didn't work where the coop is at, you know, and we made, and then there was a time where we actually before 2020, when that whole thing happened, when, you know, when COVID came out, we actually had cut our garden in half, and now we've doubled it again.
Yeah. And I didn't talk about it, but last year, I actually quit raising any livestock last year. We had a whole bunch of deaths in the family and we were just taking care of things. There was just a lot going on. And I said, okay, I called everything, put it in the freezer and said, you know what? We're taking a break from this for a few. And then got back into it in the spring, you know, and it just needed that break from it because it was just too much on top of everything else. And I kept the garden, you know, smaller until this year and expanded that over into the new property. And I mean, I was working on a food forest over there already. I had some trees planted and some things going on there, but I hadn't actually put a garden in over there. So this year I put the garden in over there, expanded. So it was just kind of a slow expansion. We've had that property for, I think, 4 years now. So I was pretty slow in expanding over there, you know, and that was fine because it was just too much going on.
Yeah. And there's times when you're going to have to do that. And I think it's okay. I mean, now we're expanding and expanding. We expanded the garden double this year at our homestead and then at our property, man, we put in almost 50 trees and 1500 square feet of garden over there. I mean,
that was a lot because you had to hand water that stuff, this drought and stuff. That made a lot of work.
I did everything. That was basically, we didn't put the garden until this fall. So I put the new garden in there in a cover crop, but the trees was the only, all weekend, that's what I did all weekend was basically took care of all those baby trees. I hand watered them. There's no well out there. So we had to haul water. We just had, it was a lot of work, but actually enjoyed it.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah,
that's gonna sound crazy, but the mundane of the walking back and forth and watering and being in my own thoughts and in nature.
There's some labor that's a lot of fun. Like I can go out in the garden, or you know, pulling weeds and doing things. That don't bother me. Get me in the kitchen, then I start getting stressed out about the work.
Exactly.
It's just some work. Some work doesn't feel like work. You know, some of it's enjoyable. And some of it isn't. And it's the stuff that isn't that'll wear you down. But it's also stuff that has to be done. Not all work, I guess, enjoyable. Just some stuff has to be done.
Yeah. So you have to do it. I mean, in some ways you can tailor your homestead more to your liking. If you, like, I have no desire to have a cow, but some people, I have a couple of friends that the cow was what they built their whole homestead around. Mm-hmm. You know, you just have to go with what works for you.
And talking about like calling animals and stuff being on your list of least favorite things to do. Well, I know a guy, him and his wife, they raise 100 chickens. But they don't process them. They pay the Amish to process them for them, like $2 a bird or something. Yeah. And because it's just something they don't enjoy. So they just get it done and then they don't have to do it. And I mean, there's things you could, like you said, tailor your homestead to kind of fit what you enjoy and what you don't, and kind of mold it and make it better, you know, for you.
Right. Yeah. Cause we're not all going to be good at everything. And that's where it's nice right. to know your other homesteaders, because I buy mm-hmm. my meat right now from other homesteaders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
absolutely. I only have one other thing on my list of things that I get frustrated by that are my least favorite thing about homesteading. And in my opinion, it's a thing it ought not be, but it is. And that's government restrictions of what you can and can't do. That sure. frustrates me to no
Couldn't
end.
Couldn't have this conversation without mentioning that.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. It's like so irritating, you know, that they're going to put their nose in your business on what animals you raise, what you build on your homestead, everything. And it's just like it gets out of hand, you know. I mean, I understand to a point wanting to keep things safe or keep things, you know, in a way where it doesn't affect your neighbor's property or whatnot, but they take it to such an extreme in some places. And as an urban homesteader, it's probably way worse than it is for people, even though there's still regulations in a lot of the, you know, a lot of rural areas too. So there's just things you got to deal with there. That's a headache and it's exhausting and it's frustrating. And it's just something that you find out what you can and can't do and you do the best with what you got. I mean,
I'm hoping that as time goes by, we can change those rules.
There are certainly places that are way worse than others. I mean, there's places where you can't even have a garden in your front yard or things like that. You know, it's just like, you know, and that's really frustrating. Now it isn't that bad. There is animal restrictions, building restrictions, things like that. Like I said, I understand some of that to a point, but they take it to the extreme in most places.
Yeah. Well, I know some places it's changing. I mean, there's places that didn't allow chickens that people can have chickens now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, some of it, we just have to try to be active and change some of those.
Yeah.
Rules.
There's just, step in, try to make some changes. And I think it's almost a lost cause in my town.
That's what frustrates us the most. I mean, where we're at, we can have chickens, but we can't have ducks.
Yeah.
Don't ask me why. Probably has to do with the waterfowl that we have.
Probably. But, yeah.
And like at our new property, there's a lot of building restrictions, which is frustrating as you try to start a new homestead. It adds so much money to things.
Yeah, it's even in plants and trees. I mean, if they consider them invasive in your area, they might restrict you. Like white mulberry in Indiana is considered, you know, a invasive plant. They don't want you planting that.
I mean, that's have black currants.
Yeah, I mean, there's just these things that, you know, that homesteaders are common homesteading plants, but yet, you know, you're not supposed to plant them because of the restrictions and whatnot. So it's one of the things. It's in that list for sure.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that as time goes on and the homesteading movement, I believe right now is kind of in a growing stage, that maybe we can change some of these
things. I hope so. Yeah. And I do encourage people to do that, you know, get involved and do what you can in your area. And like you said, there are a lot of communities that it has been changed in and it's gotten better.
Yeah. Ours did. I think it was, I don't even know, maybe 6 years ago, our downtown, which is even more urban than we are. I mean, they're very urban, very close together. They voted that people could have chickens, but not roosters, but they could have chickens.
Yeah. I get that. So, you know, I get that. The rooster thing. I mean, it could
if
you've ever been around a really loud rooster.
And it's not just in the morning.
No, they get excited about anything.
Yeah.
So I kind of get it. But well, I think that, did you have anything else on your list or?
I don't have anything else on my list. Those were my biggest, the other thing too, is sometimes one of the negatives with homesteading is sometimes it does tie you to home, so you can't.
You know what? That should have made my list because that is something. I mean, I talked about how I got rid of the animals last year.
Yeah, like going to vacation.
That was part of it. We were so busy doing things, we couldn't really take care of them. And you're right.
It can be negative unless you have somebody that you do a trade with and they can come and take care of your stuff. But
yeah, that's for sure. That's something
that gets pretty hard. I mean, especially if you have animals.
There's certain things you can do, like with chickens, like say you're doing Cornish cross and you're doing the 8 week thing and you can take a break between them and, you know, butcher them and you only have them for 8 weeks. Like I did one time with quail, we were going on vacation. And so I collected all the eggs I could for a few days and got like 100 eggs and stuck them all in the incubator, processed all my bird, and then went on vacation. So we had 18 days before them hatched. So I came back just in time for them to hatch, put them in the brooder and get them back in the cages.
But did you have somebody coming and checking on the incubator at all?
Nope. I just trusted it.
Oh, wow.
and it worked out great. Yeah. We were gone for several days.
So you can plan. But I mean, that's one of the reasons. That is one of the reasons why so far I'm open to changing my mind. But that's one of the reasons why we don't want a cow.
Yeah.
That's a big time commitment.
That is. And it's a big, and it's an important animal. Even if it's
Get
somebody to come watch and make sure they're taking care of it properly.
Now, where we are hoping to move at our homestead, we actually do. There's a large group of homesteaders out there. So it might work out where we all do work trades. But that's one of my reasons. And then the one of the reasons I don't want a milk cow is just that day in and day out commitment.
yeah, for sure. Yeah. There's just some things like that.
Yeah. So it leaves you tied down. Yeah. Even if somebody gets sick, if a family member gets sick, you're tied to, I got to find somebody to come here so I can leave type of thing.
Yeah. And that's where it is good to have a community around you where you can help each other out and be there, because I think that's what a lot of homesteading communities do, farming communities do. They kind of watch over each other's places when they do have to leave property for a while. Yeah. And that's great. I think it's great when you can form that kind of a community around it. It makes things like that possible. It really does.
If you don't have that, you can always train somebody that's interested in learning.
Sure. It's like an apprenticeship. Yeah. Get them involved. Yeah. Bring them in. Yeah. Teach them. Yeah.
I mean, that's what I did. My friend has cows and milk cows. She's always had milk cows and she loves them. And I had never dealt with milk cows before. Mm-hmm. And that was where I learned how to milk and take care of cows was I went over there to learn how to do it. And then it was a good thing I did because they ended up having a family health emergency and ended up milking their cow for a week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
that's good. Yeah. Well, we had a couple questions from the Homestead Front Porch Facebook group this week that I wanted to maybe tackle a little bit. They're pretty short. One of them is pretty short, I think, that we can jump onto. Tim asked about, he just made a little poll. It says, autumn or springtime for planting fruit trees? Which is it, Rachel? Autumn or springtime? Which is the best time to plant?
All the above. When you get a good price.
No, I actually answered in that and gave my answer for it, but
I actually took the poll and I actually prefer fall just because they're easy to water, but most places don't.
Availability is in spring. Yeah. Usually all the, what trees are going to be available in spring. To me, it doesn't matter if you catch them when they're dormant and the ground's not frozen. Yeah. I think the closer you can get to thaw ground, but dormant tree.
I can tell you after hand watering all summer through a drought, fall.
Yeah. Yeah. I think early spring or late fall. Is okay. In winter, if the ground's stalled. I mean, if you're in a place where the problem is, like you said, availability. Unless you're ordering your trees online or something, if you're buying into big box stores near
even
you,
then, I think a lot of those. I ordered mine online, and they come when they go by your grow zone.
Yeah, exactly. So when you can get them, the thing is, you can plant them in the middle of summer. They're just going to take a lot more care. Yeah. You're going to have to water them. You're going to be paying a lot of attention to them. I've planted plenty of trees in the heat of summer and they did fine. I just had to give them a lot of care, but it is best to plant them when they're dormant. And I thought it was a good question. I mean, I see the problem there because a lot of people say, fall when they're dormant, plant them for winter. Great. But then when does everybody get them in? Spring.
Right. You're not, where are you going to get them? Even when I ordered through a company and they shipped them when. Yeah. So, I ordered them right before Christmas and they didn't ship them till March.
So I absolutely get the question why it would be something you wonder about because it's they're getting them now, but is that not the best time? So, and you can get them in the summer, middle of summer, but like I said, not the best time, but it's doable. It's just, I guarantee you the tree will be happier in the ground in the summer than it would be in a pot in the summer.
Yes.
So at least you can water it. It'll be happier there. So that's one of the questions. The other one is one that I know nothing about, but I found it interesting because I think a lot of people are interested in it. And
it's really a cool question.
Yeah. Alana asked, she says, does anyone here or Alana? I don't know how is Alana, probably Alana. Does anyone here grow and spin cotton into yarn? If so, can you tell me what seeds to get, what tools are needed, any tips you might be able to offer? Says, I crochet and knit and would love to be self-sufficient in making clothing for my family. I think that's an interesting question because
Yeah,
absolutely. That's a big part of homesteading for a lot of people. And a lot of people do wool. You were talking about earlier that some people you know are shearing.
Yeah, wool. I've never heard of doing cotton, though.
But cotton is something I don't think about, but yet that's something you can grow and use. And it was used. I mean, it's for centuries. It's been used in that way.
Yeah. The only thing I know about it is you pick the fluff off. I mean, what you've seen in a movie.
Yeah, exactly. In a movie and stuff. But as far as growing it and stuff, I mean, I actually I'm going to link two websites up because it actually sent me down a little bit of a rabbit hole searching. I was like, well, that's a good question. I wonder how you do grow it or where it grows.
Somebody has to do it. We have t-shirts, right?
And what tools are needed. And you can do it on a small scale. I've seen a lot of small tools for it and making things out of it. And these two websites I'll link up in the show notes were Cotton.
Sounds like such a cool process. And if she ends up going down this road, she really needs to document it. Be really fun to follow.
Yeah. Cottonacres.com and cottonclouds.com were the two websites I kind of come across. It had tools in there. It had like seeds. It had all kinds of stuff. And it had a lot of information in there that you could use to get you started in. Like I said, it's nothing that I've ever
seeds
done.
That's fun. Yeah, because it took me hard. It was hard for me to find sorghum seeds.
They looked a little expensive. The seeds looked expensive, but I don't know how, again, I don't know how much you get from these plants. I don't know. I really don't. I mean, so it'd be something to study more on, but I thought it was interesting. And I just wonder how many people out there would be interested in something like that. Because I know there's a lot of people who are making their own clothing and things. And I found it pretty fascinating, actually. And you can, you know, it looked like you would do a similar process as wool as far as making your yarns.
Okay. So they whatnot, do like the spinning it. And
you can, now, if you were doing the big, what's the big tool? The cotton gins and stuff. Now, those would be more for like making bigger pieces
like
bolts of
fabric and stuff.
Yeah. But you were able to do it with like the small hand stuff, too. I've seen some videos or some videos out there on it. I found some YouTube videos, not because I'm going to do any of this, but I just thought it was kind of interesting. And I thought, again, we were talking earlier.
It does
about
sound very time consuming, but if that ends up being your favorite, I mean, that's soap making. I don't make any money doing soap, but I enjoy doing it. So, you know,
again, it's one of them skills you could build, you could develop that if it's something you're into. I think it's great because there's always something else in homesteading you can learn and do and find new ways. And I think it's cool. I think it's pretty neat. And it's anything you can do to be self-sufficient and making your own clothes. I mean, how expensive is clothing? I mean, that's a big that's as big of a money saver as food is, in my opinion. So, if you could do that, that's awesome.
Cotton washcloths, cotton bed, whatever. I mean, you can go endless.
How big you want to get with it, right? So I thought it was interesting. Well, there's a couple of resources. I don't know if those are the best resources on the internet. There were ones that came up on a search pretty quick. And like I said, I did see seeds in there. I seen information articles about growing it. I seen tools in there for working with it. So definitely some things that to check
out.
I'm
gonna have to follow those. Those sound interesting.
Yeah, they were
a rabbit hole, you know, for
they can definitely get dark. I ended up on some YouTube videos and watching a few things it was interesting. You know, like I said, it's nothing I'm probably going to do, but I find it interesting just to, even when there's things that I would never do, I think it's neat to know about how it happens anyway. You know, it's just kind of like those TV shows you watch, like How Is This Made or whatever, you know,
right?
And you get to see the process. It's not nothing you're ever going to do, but it's neat to know how it's done, you know. So I just find it fascinating. But those were, like I said, I'll put those in the show notes for anybody that wants to check that out and look into it. The process looked very similar to working with wool, just the growing.
Yeah, that surprises me.
Yeah.
But I guess,
Yeah, I think it was pretty close. I don't know which is better. Probably wool, but I don't know. We use cotton for, like I said, a long time. Cotton's been used in those ways. Yeah, it depends on what you're using it for, I guess, for sure. But yeah, that was all the questions I seen, and they were pretty cool. Because we were talking about pros and cons of homesteading, I think an episode like this is going to be for people who maybe aren't homesteading yet, that want to get started in homesteading.
That's true. That's
so true. So I want to think about resources for people like that. Maybe for one, don't be afraid to do it right where you're at. We mention that all the time, that you can do it if you live in the city. You can do certain things if you live in an apartment. If you live out in the country, you're blessed. Take advantage of it. Do a lot more, but there's plenty of things you can do right where you're at, no matter where it is. And there's some good resources out there. But a book that I find really good is The Self-Sufficient Life and How to Live It. Do you have that book? I have it right here.
I'm pretty sure I do.
Don Seymour. Matter of fact, it's right here with my computer sitting on it, so I don't want to move it. It's a good book, and I just find it. There's two books. The Encyclopedia of Country Living is another one, but I actually like the one by John Seymour better. I think it's got better illustrations in it, and I just think it's a little bit better. I mean, there's more stuff in the encyclopedia.
Well, and we have resources in video, you know, YouTube, and then you know, some of those historical documentaries like the BBC Wartime Farm, BBC Victorian Farm. They all have document, and really some of it's historical related, but a lot of that stuff is still animal husbandry and knitting and crocheting. And
even if you're in an urban homestead and you're looking for inspiration to get started, finding what you can do there, there's plenty of YouTubers out there.
Yep.
Like, I mean, it's something I did, you know, it's like, I didn't know what I could do on my property when I first started several years ago. And that's what YouTube is, what actually was the kind of like the final straw on the camel's back for me. The Gervais family, which was the urban homestead out in California, they were, when I seen what they were doing on their little, I think it's 5th acre lot or 10th acre or whatever they have there.
Those small space ones, those ones always blow me away more than, I mean, I love seeing the big farms, but when you see these little urban farms, that
I'm impressed I'm more impressed with people who could grow huge abundance on a small space, because you have to be so intense and so intentional about the space you're using and how you're doing it. It's impressive. I find it just,
and some of those even have like, are they the ones that also had goats too? Milk goats on like a 10th of an acre in town.
They did. They had chickens. Okay. I think they're vegetarians, so I don't think they ate anything, but they,
well, these were milk goats.
Yeah.
I can't remember. There was some, it was similar though, if it wasn't the same family.
There's a lot of good urban homesteading ones out there. If you search urban homesteading or urban permaculture or whatever, there's a lot of good videos.
Well, and there's some universities that are doing there's one university I've been watching a lot of permaculture stuff on.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the university extensions has,
there's a lot of good information out there on YouTube. And I think you can, and there's a lot of great books. There's all kinds of books on urban homesteading.
I mean, like canning, MSU Extension here offers a canning class. Sometimes it's free and sometimes it's $10.
Yeah.
And it's all online. Either way. And it's several classes in a row that teach you how to can.
Maybe I should like take all my food down here and say, hey, why don't you guys practice on my food?
There
and
you
then
go.
I'll take it home. That way I don't have to can.
If only. You'll just have to bring it up here. I'd love to can.
Yeah, that's, I wish. That'd be nice. It's like I said, I don't hate it. I hate the all at once, the too much.
Right.
That's the thing, I guess. It makes me hate it. But anyway,
I need to hire a dishwasher is what I need to hire.
There you go. Canning. There you go. Yeah, the cleanup is horrible. That's all we have today. I think that's just inspiring. I find it motivating. Sometimes I think we glamorize homesteading to the point where it's like nothing's bad about it. There are things that, and it's different for everybody. Like, there's things that we might be frustrated by that some people doesn't bother them, like me canning, you love it. So I mean, it's like you know, there's just different things for different people, but it's not going to be perfect. So,
it with like little kids has its own.
Yeah, there's challenges, all kinds of challenges, and there's all kinds of blessings. But for me, the good outweighs the bad by far, or else we wouldn't be doing it. But we wouldn't do it otherwise. So, And I think that most people will find out. But I also don't want to take people to the point of expectations, like we're going to do this and it's just going to be sunshine and rainbows and, nothing bad.
Beautiful.
It's not the case, because I guess that could frustrate you and make somebody bail out and say, I don't want to do this anymore because I didn't know it was going to be like this. Well, not everything's great, but I think most of it is. I really do.
Yeah, it is. I feel like it far outweighs.
Oh, yeah.
The pros far outweigh the cons.
I couldn't imagine not doing some level of homesteading. I couldn't imagine it not being part of my life.
Yeah, I couldn't. I don't think it's within me to not.
I don't think it is in me either at this point. I mean, when I started,
when I went back to work after my kids graduated, I didn't have a garden. And I said, I'm not going to have a garden. I had a plot at the community garden. Mm-hmm. I was in the group talking about that. Mm-hmm. I remember in the homestead front porch talking about my community garden plot. Even that, it just wasn't enough. The next year, I was like, I can't do it. I have to, it is in me. I have to homestead. I have to have my
garden. A few years ago, I remember downsizing my garden a lot because I was trying to make more room for the grandkids in the back. We put up a swing set, and because we always have grandkids running around now. So it's like, okay, I need some space back here for these kids, you know? And it's like, so I started ripping things out. We're ripping raised beds out. We kind of turned one half of the backyard into, and then it was like, I was miserable because I didn't have my full garden anymore. I just had a few beds here and there and had some trees.
Right.
And so I eventually just started putting more and more and more back in.
Yeah, I literally
switched down to a little area.
I literally got depressed that year. I'd just look out at the yard and I would be like, oh, my garden. It's gone. It's grass.
It's just part of us now, Rachel. We gotta have that in our lives. So it's I think it is what you start doing it, it becomes part of you and you just can't and you want more and more and more of it. Again, you do have to be careful about how fast you add more and more and more.
Balance.
You definitely burn yourself out, but you do find yourself just wanting to do it one more thing and one more thing and one more thing all the time. And I think that's
for
good.
Me, it's just, for me, it is my happy place. It's healing. Mm-hmm. Even with all the bad things, even with chipmunks and squirrels eating my melons, and it's still worth it.
I was watching that groundhog in my backyard just a little bit ago, messing around, but he ain't bothering me too bad right now. So I'll probably just let him be for a while.
We just need that. We had a fox for a long time that was helping keep the squirrel population down. And I don't, maybe this fox moved away.
Yeah, we don't have dogs anymore. When we had dogs, we didn't have any problems with the backyard. But now we don't have any dogs. Our dogs got old and we just didn't replace them once they passed. So we're
our
like, okay.
Dog, our squirrels know the dog cannot get in there.
Oh, yeah.
So they're not stupid.
I wouldn't have that groundhog running around my backyard though if we had the dogs, I'll tell you that.
Right. We did stop. We had deer for a while come back after our first dog, after our dog pet died. And then the deer were getting really bold into our yard, and that now we have the dog again and we haven't had deer. So it does help.
Dogs are, even if you're not like, even if it isn't like a livestock dog or anything like that, just having a little dog or whatever will keep animals away from your garden. So that's a whole episode in itself.
it is. They smell the dog.
So, all right, Rachel, well, I think that'll wrap it up. And I hope everybody got a little bit of something out of it and got a little bit of encouragement or motivation or just maybe felt like they're in good company, because that's the way they feel too, that some things are good, some things are bad, and we're right there with you if that's the way you feel. And against it, be encouraged that it's worth it. It's all worth it as far as
yes,
we're
it
concerned.
Is.
So,
yes.
So until next week, happy homesteading and God bless.
And grow where you're planted.